Welcome to our second edition of The Art of Coaching, our conversation with coaches that give us their philosophy on how they do what they do. And I'm really happy to get a chance to talk to John McCarthy, head coach of the San Jose Barracuda, San Jose Sharks AHL franchise, of course. Johnny Mac, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Excited.
I'll start off with what I always start off with when I talk to you. We had this conversation basically last year on my radio show here in Saskatchewan. Why coaching?
It's a good question. So a little bit of my background was that I played in the Sharks organization for 10 and a half years. I had a medical situation that came up halfway through a season and, kind of forced my retirement. And I always kind of prefaced that with, it was getting close to the end anyway. It's not like I was an up and comer and this like completely derailed a promising NHL career. I was winding down anyway. I had already put some thought into what I wanted to do post hockey, playing hockey, and coaching was a possibility. And call it fate or whatever you want to call it. The day my medical situation popped up, the Sharks moved on from Peter DeBoer. And the AHL head coach, Roy Sommer, at the time, moved up to the Sharks, which meant there was a vacancy on the Barracuda bench. And GM Joe Will, could kind of sense my anxiety after my health situation came up and, was great and said, you know what, listen, we'll put you on the bench the rest of the year. I was obviously an assistant for the rest of the year. See how you like it. And I loved it. I love being on the bench. It kind of kept me close to the game. I was already that season, I believe I was 33 and the next oldest guy was like 25. So
yeah,
I was already kind of whatever you want to call it, elder.
Sure.
Right. I was old is what you should call it. So it was kind of a natural progression. And I loved it. And then after that year, things kind of shuffled again. Roy came back. I worked in development for 2 years. Didn't love that as much because it kind of, you're a little bit removed, right? You're not on the bench. You don't have as much skin in the game and the wins and losses. It's more of a long term to see the results of your work. I like that immediate gratification. Things kind of changed again two seasons ago, and I became the head coach of the Barracuda. I love it. I love every day. I love going to the rink every day. I think when that stops is when you got to start looking at a different line of work. If your heart's not in it, it's not for you because there's long hours. You miss a lot. You miss birthdays, weddings, stuff like that. So you really got to love it. And I do. And that's kind of my story, how I got into coaching.
So when you went right from playing to coaching, was that a difficult transition for you? Because I remember you as a player, you were a seventh round draft choice who busted your tail, played games for the San Jose Sharks, made some contributions. And I know you're a competitive guy. Did you have to dial that back at all when you stepped behind the bench and immediately went from player to coach? And that's going to be difficult.
Yeah, it is. It is, especially on the same team, right? So, the relationship that you have with the players. But I think my progression was an advantage for me in that I was an assistant, and yes, you're still technically an authority figure, but it's different than a head coach.
Yeah.
You're kind of more of a pat on the back type, conversation type. And then when I did development, it was even probably a step closer to the players, right? And you're kind of working with them one-on-one. And a lot of the conversations I had with players when I was doing development were similar to the ones that I had with them when I was the captain. It's not a whole lot different. So having those years where I was kind of figuring out how to transition and then becoming the head coach is, you're the ultimate authority figure. And I'm sure we'll get into kind of my theory on coaching in
yes.
general later, but that, without having those couple of years as a little bit of a buffer, and the other thing that happened over those couple of years is that a lot of the guys I played with, there's a lot of turnover in the minor leagues, right? Most of the guys had moved on. So it was a little bit easier as a head coach on new players that, you know, didn't have me as a teammate as well.
When you were coaching in the AHL, and we talked about this before we started recording, it's got to be difficult. So I'm going to ask you, how do you measure success in the AHL, especially with a team like the San Jose Sharks? Of course, winning is the ultimate success, but can you take solace or comfort or whatever it is, saying, yeah, but this is what else we're doing? So how do you measure success with the Barracuda?
Yeah, that's a good question, and we talk about it a lot. And obviously, the goals are kind of two-pronged in the AHL, right? You need to develop the next wave of NHL players, right? But we feel as an organization that is best done through winning hockey games, being around a winning culture, getting experience in playoff games, right? Which we haven't had in 2 years, right? So we need to be better in that department in order to bring along. I would say development is the ultimate goal, right? But we feel that winning is going to fuel development, right? And that's where we've fallen short for 2 seasons, and we need to change that this year, in order to get these guys exposure into those. The closest thing to an NHL game would be an AHL playoff game, right? The stakes are higher. There's more eyeballs on you. It's more competitive. So those type of games are what we want to expose our guys to. That being said, we have done a good job developing some players. Shakir Makmadulin made some great strides last year.
Huge.
Excited to see him at camp, see if he can push for a spot on the Sharks. Some other guys, Thomas Borlo's gone up and played. So there are guys that are moving on and developing in their careers, but I think that number would increase when we have some more team success, which we're going to do this upcoming season.
When you are in a season after a game and now postseason in the summer, how much do you look at yourself and your wanted areas to improve? I know you as a player from the days in San Jose. I know you looked in the mirror a lot. How much of that do you do as a coach, and why is that important?
Yeah, I think it's hugely important in for me personally. I do it during the season, but I do most of it after the season. That summer is a great time to I have a list. I'm actually sitting at my desk, I guess I would call it. And I have a list of coaches that I've talked to over the course of the summer, right? And bounced ideas off of, and you know, without getting into anything that's going to give another team an advantage, and same way the other way, but having conversations with coaches that I have relationships with, and how they handle things, and you know, different situations that come up, you know, on ice, off ice, with their staff, with their players, just all kinds of questions that we have conversations over that you know, make us all better. And I feel like that's a great opportunity. Along with taking the summer watching, you know, I was just, for instance, watching Edmonton's penalty kill, you know, that in the playoffs, it was the story of the playoffs, you
It
know,
was.
now we're kind of taking, it's a good opportunity to take a peek at the teams that are succeeding in all of these areas. Why are they succeeding? What can we pull from that that we can now bring to our group? You know, that's kind of how everybody goes about their business. It's kind of a copycat league. When I first came in Detroit, everybody wanted to be like Detroit, right? Because they had
Right.
that run. They were in the finals every year, you know, and now everybody wants to be Florida, right? Because obviously they just won. So I think this is a great time to better yourself as a coach.
What would you say that your philosophy is? Are there certain foundational pillars that playing for John McCarthy you must be able to do?
Yes. Yeah, and I think we need your best every day. You need to be competitive, right? You need to create an environment where guys are pushing one another to be better, right? That's my job as a coach. I believe in attention to detail as well. I think my practices are a lot of times revolve around situations that pop up in a game. You know, I like to see people that can think on their feet, because there are, you can prepare all you want. You know, as far as a pre-scout, as far as a game plan, there's situations that come up in a game where you got to react, right? And we got to drill those into our guys. We got to drill this is how you need to be thinking. When a situation comes up, we need you working above a puck or something along those lines, that they are now able to deal with more situations, than what is covered in a pre-scout. So I would say those two things. And I think finding good leadership is important to me, right? And I think even a first-year player can be a leader. Whether it's the way that you carry yourself at the rink, whether it's the way you go about your business, whether you're a vocal guy, mostly those are tend to be older players, but I like people that aren't afraid to go against the tide and stick out in a positive manner, right? And I think, not to sound like an old man, but I think today's kids, everybody wants to conform. Everybody wants to join the flow. And even if it's not productive, and it's like, why are we don't want that. We want guys that will swim against the tide to do the right thing and, on and off the ice. So I think those are kind of that's how I like my team to be. That's how I like my players to conduct themselves.
Can you build leaders?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that you can. I think that you can. I think there are ways to draw it out of people. I don't know if it's not in there at all. I don't know if you'll be able to manufacture it, but if you see something in somebody, I think you can put them in situations and through conversations, interactions, experiences, you can kind of make them into a leader of your group.
So, as a coach, you have a lot of people who are also around you to support you, but you also have some controllables and uncontrollables. A lot of it for at the professional level, there are uncontrollables for you. So, how do you handle those situations where guys get hurt and you're losing guys, and then guys get inserted in the lineup that you didn't have 20 games ago? How do you, as a coach, fit them and fit all of that into the daily process so that you have that routine, that culture to continue to roll forward?
I personally like to kind of flip it on its head with in front of the players. What I like to do is, so your two best players just get called up, right? You got a game that night. I like to go in the meeting and my attitude is, how could we not win this game? I'll find something on the other team, and it might not be completely true, right? But I'll find something on the other team where, hey, these guys are vulnerable right here. They're last in the league at retrievals. We're a forecheck team. How could we let this game get away? It's almost like you have to completely 180 that, because they're thinking the same thing. They're going to
Right.
that meeting like, our top two scorers aren't here. Our top D is hurt. They're definitely not thinking we're going to win this game. And you can't feed into that. You can't, because again, it's uncontrollable. I have zero control over that. And the other thing is, in situations like that, there's guys getting an opportunity now. There's two guys playing that maybe haven't played in a week or are called up from the East Coast League. And with those players, I think it's important to, having been in that position in the NHL, right? Being a guy that in and out of the lineup, up and down with Worcester at the time.
Yeah.
I think it's important to instill confidence in those players. Like, hey, we called you up for this reason. And I think it's important to be very straightforward with what you want out of them, right? Because their head is spinning. They're, hey, I got to score a goal. I got to do this. I got to do that. It's like, no, this is what I need you to do. And I know that you can do it because I've seen you do it in Wichita. Something along those lines, right? You kind of prop them up and then you take the excuse out of everybody's heads by possibly overstating a fact about the upcoming team, stretching the
Well,
truth.
it's interesting, take things out of guys' heads, try to remove as much doubt as possible. But you played, you understand how much doubt there is in each individual player. And it always can't be about you doing it, right? You have to build that culture where the players start speaking some truth to each other. How and when do you know it's time to step back, or is that just a process that just keeps evolving?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's every coach's dream, and I'm sure every coach has kind of brought this up in interviews. It's like, You hear it in the playoffs in the NHL a lot. You know, Paul Maurice, I think every interview he talks about it, right? It's the leadership in that room that takes care of itself. I don't, you hand the keys over to the room, right? But I think it's important, especially at the AHL level, with the amount of turnover year to year. That's kind of the difference between the NHL and the AHL. There's shorter contracts. People obviously move up. So I think it's important to be absolutely sure that locker room is ready to control itself before you kind of hand the keys over, or you know, get them going on that path. So it's every coach's dream, but I think it is important to be realistic and honest with yourself. Is this group ready to do that? If not, I got to stay involved. I got to keep this thing on the tracks, right? And then if somebody emerges that they can kind of be that person or a group of players, ideally, you know, then that's when you definitely do want to kind of prop them up, enable them, show them doing the right things, praise them for the right things, and kind of push that towards the top. Who and they can then run the room themselves.
How much do you need to keep learning yourself?
A ton. There's the game is constantly changing too, you know,
Right.
and the way everybody does things starts changing. Kind of like I talked about, like the Detroit and Pittsburgh, and now it's Florida. Like, what leads to success, and what are different teams trying, and how do you conduct yourself? You know, part of being a coach also is being a salesman. You got to go in and be able to command a room, and you got to get people to believe what you're saying, right?
Right.
And so that's a whole nother side of it. There's so many aspects to coaching, the relationship side of it with your players. You know, I've read books on that. I've read books on kind of sales, like kind
Yeah.
of going into a room and selling a story, or anything like that. And then the on ice, you know, that you could spend an entire summer going through things on whether you're tweaking your forecheck, you're tweaking your D zone coverage, what are teams doing on penalty kill, on the power play, what works, you know. There's so many different aspects. That's why coaching is fun. I go to the rink every day and it's hardly ever the same, right? Sometimes you got to go in and you got two fires to put out, with one with staff, one with players. You got to practice to plan. You got video you got to get through. It's just it's a lot, and it's great. It's so much fun, and that's why I love it.
So, what did when because you played what 577 games in the AHL, played almost 90 in the with the Sharks. That You're a seventh round draft choice. You had to work your tail off every year to prove yourself. How did that help your coaching?
Yeah, that definitely factored in that my mindset as a player, you know, especially for the first probably about 7 years when I was kind of a prospect and I
Yeah.
was going back and forth. The last few years were a little bit different. I was more of a minor league guy, but you know, coming into every season having to prove something, right? So coming in prepared. And it's a different preparation than I do now. You know, that was more physical, getting the work done in the gym, making sure I was, you know, working on my skating and my hands and all that. That period of my life is now over. And now it's more, the mentality is the same. It's still, I got to prepare. I got to make sure I know what works on the ice. I got to make sure I know what works dealing with players. I got to make sure my staff knows how I want to conduct things. I got to make sure that our development package is on point. You know, these are all the things that I'm doing over the summer. So the mentality of coming into training camp with something to prove and make a team, you know, that's the same mentality that I have now.
When you are coaching with the Barracuda, there's a lot of people out there helping. You've got Joe, Patty, Nabby, Reach, and those guys are development coaches, skill coaches, call them what you want. You've also got your assistant coaches. The dynamic must be very interesting. You're all in it for the same. I mean, it's great, but how much of that is a burden? How much of that is we've got to make sure, like you said, that we have to have the details in place. You can't just have everybody doing what they want, right? But how much of that do you have to juggle with guys you played with?
Yeah. No, that's been great. They've been a great asset for us. And I think it's all about communication. I think it's, listen, this is what we're working on today. We have a coaches meeting every day before practice, and it's this is where the pucks need to be. Hey, I noticed this guy was struggling with taking pucks off the wall on the breakout. Let's get him some reps before practice. Just stuff like that. It's just about they want to help. It's at first, I'll be completely honest, it's intimidating. Like these are Hall of Fame players, and I'm telling them what to do. And it's like, that this is kind of flipped on its head a little bit here, but they want to help, and they want, they're players, ex-players too. They're used to, being told things that, we need to work on. And so everyone's been more than helpful. I reach in there every day has been a great asset for our staff. Patty coming in and coming on the ice with the guys. It's almost like he comes on the ice and the guys, they get like wide-eyed and they're like, oh my God, that's Patrick Marleau. It's great, and then Nabby working with the goalies every day too. It's, that's we have daily conversations over kind of what they need and how we can move them along in their careers as well. Because, as a non-goalie, that's I never thought of practices from the goal. I was just kind of like get in the net and stop the puck if it comes at you. It's but there's a workload aspect, there's different types of shots, there's things they need to work on. So that's been a thing that I've learned as a coach is kind of trying to mesh those two things so that our team's getting what they need, but our goalies are also getting what they need to develop as well.
Well, Nabby kind of coached when he played too, though. He was always barking. 4 you as a coach, were there guys? I mean, you came through BU, you played for Roy a lot, but you had coaches growing up. Were there certain coaches that really struck it for you? Like, yeah, that's the way and that's the way I want to be, or that's the way that you should coach.
And I think pulling different aspects from different coaches that you had is important. Like what did they do well? Jack Parker at BU was obviously no nonsense. It was very, very straightforward what was expected of you. And if you fell short of expectations, you were going to know very quickly
Immediately.
and very loudly. So that was and it made me better. It made me way better. It made everybody that plays for him will say that he was a fantastic coach because it was his way or it was no way. And that kind of mentality is important. It's a little bit different now with the players that you're dealing with, but that's the ultimate backstop. If you hit a point where it's a player wants to do things his way, no, it's my way. It's my job to make sure that our team is playing the way that I want them to play, right? And if you're not willing to do that, then we're going to have a problem, So that's kind of the ultimate backup. Roy getting the guys together, I would say, and playing for one another was his biggest strength. Building a team mentality, right? Whether it's, getting a college guy to go out and play a physical style of game that they're not really used to, or getting guys to care about one another. And, when something happens on the ice, his biggest thing was five guys in there, right? I don't want to see somebody on the outside of anything that's going on, right? Looking at the rafters or whatever, and if you did that, you'd hear about it. That his biggest strength by far was that. And I thought that led to a lot of development for the organization as well. And I think my dad growing up coached me. And I think from him it would be, you're not going to get special treatment because you're my son. You're part of the team, you're a player.
Probably harder.
Right. And it's, you have the same bar as everybody else. And there's no excuses if you're sick, I mean, I'm not saying like he was making me play with strep throat or anything, but there was no, it was more, you're one of the players and you're going to play the same way as everybody else. You're not special, which I think is important.
As well, it gets me to my next question, which is there are some guys when playing in the AHL who are tagged to be there for a little bit and they're going to be in the NHL. And then there are some guys that are longtime AHLers that are really important to your team. I think about Nathan Todd, I think about Sabourin, I think about Gushin. I mean, some guys that I really liked watching play this year, but are really important to your team, but are going to be in the AHL for Probably like you were for a long time, and kind of just keep working day after day. How do you keep that level belief between all of them? I mean, you know what I mean? As far as we're here for the team, but some guys have their eye on the NHL. How do you keep them dialed in, keep them where their feet are?
That's the biggest, not, I don't want to say issue. That's the biggest kind of conundrum as a coach. And it's, I think you got to sell that their team success is going to lead to individual success. You know, if you're one of those older players, you know, your contract might improve next year. We refer to them as standard bearing players. Everybody wants winners. You know, everybody's looking at Hershey's team now, and what can we pull out of that? You know, Coachella, they've been in the finals 2 years in a row. Well, who can we pull from that? Guys on that team got one-way NHL contracts out of that are probably still going to play in the minors, but people want winners, right? So convincing all of those guys that, hey, you want to call up, be a good teammate, get in a shooting lane, change when you're supposed to change. Those things will get you there quicker than scoring your way out of the AHL. Very seldomly does that happen. And we bring up the most successful team we've had, meaning whether it's Worcester or San Jose, was in 2017. We made the conference finals. And if you look at the roster from that team, Barclay Goodrow, Ryan Carpenter, Joakim Ryan, Tim Heed, all these guys went on and they had success personally because they bought into what we were doing as a team. So I think that's when I talk about being a salesman, and it's not always false. It's not always BS. It's sometimes it's true. You know, I got to sell that. I got to sell, hey, we'll get you there, right? But if you want to go on your own page and do things your own way, you're not going to get there ever, right? So, and sometimes that takes time. Sometimes guys do come in and they want to do it their way, and it takes time. And you want those older players to kind of put their arm around them. And it's my job to kind of do the opposite. You know, we need you to do things the right way. And then there's a little dynamic there. And over time, you wear them down and you get them to kind of fall into line. And then what you'll see from there is that they'll probably move on.
Grant Yonne used to have a saying, you have to get players to play the way they don't want to play so they can become the players they want to become.
Yeah, that's great. I love that.
Yeah, it's kind of what you do. But with the players nowadays, and this is an old guy talking, you know, they're very different. They want to conform right away. They're quiet. Some say sensitive. Some would say entitled. As a coach, and you're in your 30s, so you're still young and you can relate to that. How do you get the message to these guys? Do you have to always put your arm around them, or can you be kind of a hard ass when you have to be a hard ass?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's coaching boiled down to me. And
Yeah.
I think what you got to keep in mind is that they're all individuals, right? And I don't think something that works for one player might not work for another player. And I don't know if there's a uniform approach that works with everybody. I think it is important to build trust. And how is that built? Like, if I could bring a player into my office and sit him down and say, you got to trust me, and then they leave and they do, that would be great. But I can't. That it's not how it works, right? So how I do it is through little interactions, right? A lot of times, I'll go out and get a coffee, right? I already had coffees. I don't even need a coffee. I just want to run into this guy, right? So it's, and I ask him a little bit in passing about his family or his hometown, whatever it is, right? So you establish a little bit of a relationship there. And then when it comes time to, it's not going to happen all at once either. This takes months. This takes weeks. It takes, hey, this I got they got to believe that I care about them and I care about the team, right? And the only way to do that is to show them that through these interactions, right? And then when it comes time to pull the reins a little bit and say, hey, this wasn't good enough. You know, you did you think you were good enough? You know, and 9 times out of 10 they'll be like, no, you know, and you're like, okay, why? And then you get into why, what they need to change, and then you want to see that change. If it still doesn't change after the conversation, you got a different problem on your hands. That's when you can get a little more firm, right? But I think starting off with that feeling of, hey, you know, tell me about yourself, tell me about your life, tell me about what got you into hockey. Things like that are questions that can lead to conversations that lead to that trust relationship that I'm looking to establish with every player.
So, is this something when you are trying to build that trust, you've got to do it with 22, 23, 24, 25 guys? Do you have to, are there some guys, I don't have to worry about him. And there's other guys you probably got to spend more time with. Do you have to balance that yourself, or do you, can you delegate that to your assistants? Like, how much of that is involved in, this is a group project?
Yeah, a lot. Like I use my assistant a lot for that. And I think what another way that I think is very useful is kind of having the assistants take the temperature of the room, right? So they'll
Yeah.
take, yeah, right. Like they'll take a spin through the locker room or the lounge or whatever, and I'll just kind of be like, what's going on, you know? And then it's my job to then go out and any issues that come up, now I confront them, I deal with them. Right. And then we do the same thing over and over again. And then there are times where I want them to also establish this relationship with the players through video meetings, through lunch away from the rink, through, you know, getting to know them as people so that they buy in, right? Because the assistants are extension of me and they know that. And they know, you know, everything they're telling the assistant, we're all gonna know, right? It's, you know, it's kind of the way it goes. So I think using your whole staff in that way, and the development staff also that you brought up, you know, and that's a little bit different because they do have their conversations, you know, by themselves, and I kind of leave it with them, like, hey, if you think I need to know it, tell me. If you don't think I need to know it, you don't have to tell me, right? And I think giving them that leeway of just making sure that my message is being supported, which it always is, I think that's important too.
What's the message a coach has to be sending his team during a game while you're on the bench? I watch you a lot during the game, and I am frankly quite surprised at how in control you are, because you're a young coach still. You don't get upset at the refs. Well, maybe you do, but you hold it in. Your decorum behind the bench is impressive for a young guy. Where did that come from?
Well, I've always kind of been that way. I've always kind of been a little more reserved, a little more cerebral. You know, and there are definitely times where I lose it on the refs too. Like, but I'm not perfect, but you
Yeah,
know, I
but
think
you've
it is.
been really good about that.
Yeah. That's I think it is important too, because your team, not to call them dogs, it's kind of like a dog, right? If a dog can sense its owner's feelings, right? And they can just lunge at somebody because you're tense, you know, and it's like you have that effect on your team as a coach as well. They know your mood. They know by the way you're talking, the way you're carrying yourself, the way that you're standing, you know, things
Right.
like that. Body language is important. I think maintaining that presence where, and then having live feedback is important as well, right? So somebody comes off, you know, if it's the first time, I try to lean down and I lean down and, hey, you know, this, what, you know, that's not good enough. We can't be doing that. Right. Second time, maybe it's in front of everybody. Maybe it's as they come off, you let them know, right? Because I think it's important to have that feedback, both negative and positive, right? Positive always in front of everybody. Praise, you throw praise in front of everybody, build them up, you know, because then other guys learn from that as well. And then when you, I don't want to say call out, but if you
Yeah, but
make it known you're unhappy with a certain aspect of a player's game, you're not only coaching them, you're coaching the whole bench. It's like, okay, well, now the guy three people down is like, okay, well, if I do that, I'm going to hear about it too. And I don't really want to do that. So we should probably change what we're doing. So, you know, I think having that wherewithal, and the assistants are big on that as well. Because to be completely honest, when I first started coaching, I was shocked at how fast the game moved
isn't
when
it?
I wasn't playing in it. As a player, I knew the line match in my head. I could just, I knew who was coming on. I knew the other teams were, it was just easy. I don't know why. I would thought as a coach it would be easier, but it did take me some time to get that into that flow. So at times you can miss something that happened on the ice. So having the assistant's eyeballs on it and like they can come down and say, hey, you know, whatever happened, is huge as well. And it allows me a chance to deal with it in real time.
As a coach, are you always sending messages? Do you always have to be a coach?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And part of being a coach is a mentor, right?
Right.
A leader, right? It's not always a teacher. It sometimes it's a more of a relationship type of thing. It's not always hockey talk. You don't always have to be talking X's and O's or forecheck or whatever. You know, I think leading and teaching are the two major aspects of coaching to me. And so I think conducting yourself in a way, and at times part of that is letting your guard down a little bit, letting them see the real you as well. I'm a person, right? I have a family. But I think always maintaining the relationship that I'm not, you know, I care about you. I care about this team. I'm not your friend, you know, necessarily, but I am your coach. And I think that's important to always maintain that.
Johnny, great stuff. I could talk to you for hours about coaching.
Yeah.
I love talking to you. You're very, like you said, cerebral, but I do appreciate your insight. Thanks very much, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Drew.
This podcast can be found for download under Sharks Hockey Digest on iTunes, Google, and Spotify, and on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yen.